What's poppin', people? It's Dante. Get my morning started here in Center City, Philadelphia. Going for my morning walk along the Schuylkill River Trail. This is the perfect place to start the day. Just walking along a path with beautiful nature, surrounded by the river. And so today I'm filming with the GoPro Mini at 1080p, 30 FPS. Got the Ricoh GR on my wrist. Looks like it's gonna be a beautiful day. Check it out. So it's been around 2.5 years of photographing in high contrast black and white, small JPEG files, contrast cranked to the maximum, the grain, the grit, the sharpness, the clarity, the shadows, the highlights, everything baked into the camera. Limiting myself and constraining myself to one way of operating with one camera on the wrist, one setting, program mode, aperture priority mode, automatic mode, and just pointing and shooting and just kind of living my everyday life and bringing my camera for the ride. And this to me is allowing me to thrive as an artist, where I'm no longer constrained by where I am, what I'm photographing, or whatever life may deliver to me. Wow, somebody is sleeping with... That's crazy. Yeah, I think actually Philadelphia is the, like, sixth largest city, but it's also like one of the most impoverished big cities in the world. Like, we are poor. Like, this city is poor, you know. This is a pretty gritty city. How to solve that problem? I don't know, you know. It's just interesting. It's like, what can you do on a localized level? You gotta disconnect from all of these, like, systems, you know, like the system of going to even the grocery store, like Trader Joe's, and like picking out these like yummy snacks. Like, Trader Joe's has so many yummy foods, right? You can get so many good snack foods, and like squirrel, like think of like a squirrel, like eating acorns and shit. Like, that's what you can find in the Trader Joe's, right? But actually, if you go directly to a farmer and you purchase beef in bulk, like a half steer, a full steer, and you have hundreds of pounds of beef in your freezer, well, then the price of groceries doesn't affect me. The price of beef, I believe, is the key indicator for how we should look at the economy. You know, how much is ground beef per pound, right? How much is steak per pound? Like, this to me is the indicating factor of the current health of the economy. Because if you look at the word capital deriving from cattle, you know, cattle was one of the earliest forms of wealth. How many cows did you own? You know, that to me is a more interesting way to reframe what wealth looks like. Because once you have a shelter, once you have a bunker, once you have your stash of meat sitting inside of your war chest, what else do you really need? Because the ultimate food that is satiating, full of all of the nutrients that you need, is found within this one animal product. And actually eliminating all of the rest of the food groups is a really wise way to reframe the way in which you look at life. And I found that through adopting a carnivore diet and stripping myself down to the bare bones, walking barefoot, sort of embracing a primal lifestyle, you know, my idea is I'm thinking ancient, living like I'm Amish, but I'm already in 2045. You know, like, I'm living in the city around the chaos of modern life with all of the amenities and all of the luxuries of the city and what that provides for me. But I work in a park and I toil in the soil, right? I'm digging ditches, chopping trees, planting things, landscaping, and doing hard, laborious tasks because it brings me meaning and joy in life. And I don't find that, you know, working in an office or doing busy work is gonna provide any value for me or for anybody, really. And so I decided to start working in a park because it provides more meaning, period. And that's why I enjoy this lifestyle, because to me it seems like the ultimate sign of wealth is health, right? That's it, right? Like, your health should be the sign of wealth. Like, if you have a healthy body, if you're strong, you're capable, you're full of vitality, you're waking up early, you're able to walk and stand, get sunlight, lift heavy things, move throughout the day, consider yourself blessed. You know, that's the only life worth living. And so when you reshape the way in which you look at this notion of wealth towards health, well, then everything else falls into place, because once you're physically capable, I believe then you're mentally capable. And once you're mentally capable and strong, well, then your spirit becomes fortified like a walled garden, and nothing can break your spirit or your love for life. And I find that physicality is the first step towards freedom, because the more physically capable, the sharper the mind. And then the sharper the mind, I believe then you have this like key that unlocks the door to freedom, because freedom is something you cultivate from within. You know, what if the world was a prison, but you had the key to unlock that door? And I think it stems through vitality. And so by fasting and eliminating food in the morning and the afternoon, and only eating one meal a day, I find that, of course, I'm undergoing autophagy, I'm burning fat, I'm gaining muscle through weight training, through my boxing training, through my Ashtanga yoga training. But realistically, the reason why I'm fasting at this point in time is for the mental clarity. You know, when you're eating food throughout the day, you're going to feel lethargic. You're going to, of course, have some sort of brain fog. You know, one of the reasons why I don't eat fruit is not because I don't think fruit is bad for you, but I find that when I'm eating fruit, if I have some fruit, you know, alongside my meat, actually, I wind up having too much like shit in the morning. I wind up shitting more than I'd like to. And then the more you shit and poop out, the more nutrients leave your body and the less satiated you feel the next day. And so by eating a 100% carnivore diet, I'm never hungry. And so by eliminating any cravings and any feelings of hunger throughout the day, you become so mentally sharp and strong. You know, where I'm just genuinely full all day long because I'm eating the most nutrient-dense, satiating food that you can possibly consume. You know, especially when you eat the organ meats like liver, you're giving yourself this multivitamin, right? And this sort of steroid. I feel like it's a natural steroid, where if you eat 1 pound of beef liver, you get just as much satiation from eating a few pounds of ground beef, which I find to be interesting. And so maybe the higher the cholesterol levels within the food, because the organ meats have a higher cholesterol and they have much more nutrients, the nutrient density of this food is ultimately what provides the satiating feeling. So I'm thinking more so about food quality, and the food quality that we consume is then in turn going to give us that feeling of vitality the next day, that feeling of satiation and the lack of craving. And so the notion of cholesterol being, you know, this bad thing for you or something to avoid is actually one of the weird modern day phenomenons that I have in conversation with other people, where people think that, you know, they come back from the doctor's visit, they're like, oh, my cholesterol was doing better or whatever. And it's like, well, I think that high cholesterol is only bad in sort of metabolically unhealthy bodies, right? And so like, if you're unhealthy and you have a high cholesterol level, well, of course that's not going to be good. However, if you actually have good metabolic health, you're full of vitality, you're healthy, and your cholesterol is slightly higher than the sort of average person, it's actually a sign of optimal health, I think, because I've noticed that the more cholesterol I consume, the better I feel, the deeper my sleep, the more vitality I have. From steroid, meaning steroid, it's a natural steroid and synthesizes the vitamin D in my cells. So the more I get sunlight and the more I have sun kissing my skin, the more beautiful I become, the more tan my skin becomes, right? And so there's also the hormones within our bodies that are regulated through the synthesis of cholesterol, such as testosterone, which then gives me this feeling of vitality and power on the deep physiological level in my cells. And I mean, is that not a critical component of our health, is our cholesterol? You know, where this modern world wants you jogging and rattling your bones like this guy, where, you know, he's not even running at a pace that's worthwhile. You know, he might as well sprint or something. He's kind of just rattling around. I'll probably wind up at the top of the cliff the same time he arrives, and he's just sitting around. I don't know. Like, if you're just rattling your bones for the sake of burning calories, what is the point, right? I think the critical component here is to think about the nutrients and the food quality, where if you give person A 2,000 calories of Oreos and person B 2,000 calories of red meat, which person is going to be metabolically healthy? You know, it's a really obvious thing, but I think that there has been this misconception taught to us. You know, I hear it from family members where they think that, you know, you remember seeing those, like, it's like certain foods, like these ultra processed junk foods that have only 100 calorie packs, and you have to track your calories, you know, and you know, it's not really talked about, where that doesn't necessarily correlate with how healthy you are, whether or not you're eating a certain amount of calories, right? So I don't count my calories, I don't count anything. I mean, I think that's like one of the most foolish sort of modern day phenomenons. And then when you think about the food pyramid and you look at it, it really does have you scratch your head, because the top of the food pyramid lists red meat to consume sparingly. And then you look at the people who produce this food pyramid from Harvard University, and these people are supposed to be like the most intelligent sort of people in the country, whatever. And, you know, these prestigious degrees that people receive, and then they promote this sort of false narrative, I believe, because I find if you flip it upside down, you know, where you have the, you know, sort of base level of this food pyramid being carbohydrates, right, grains, wheat, whatever, to be the foundation of our diet, and you flip it where you maximally consume meat, well, then your health starts to thrive, then you're no longer hungry, then you're satiated and full of vitality. And I just think that's a little bit interesting. And so whatever is right seems to be wrong, and whatever's wrong seems to be right. And so I think it's really critical in this age of information and technological abundance to think for yourself. And I think in order to think for yourself, you have to disconnect. You have to have time alone. For me, I find that by walking on this path provides an abundance of mental clarity. And I listen to the birds chirping, I look at beautiful people and sights, I see myself in the reflection of the water if I go up to the river, looking at the trees. Like, there's such a beautiful experience to be had out here in the open world. But the modern world wants you in front of a screen, sitting in a box, working within a cubicle, which is another box, staring at another box, which is the four corners of a computer, inputting data into little boxes in a spreadsheet. And it's so unnatural and not the way that we're supposed to live. And I find that by boxing yourself into that system and boxing yourself into that way of life will then almost distract you so much that you won't even be able to find yourself connecting to anything greater than yourself. You know, when I'm sitting inside the buildings in this modern city, whether I'm in my home or in the mall, you can't think clearly. There's so many distracting things within a home. And when you're having a ceiling above your head, it almost feels like your thoughts bounce against the ceiling and come right back down towards you. Whereas when you're out here in the open world underneath the sun, it almost feels like your thoughts can reach God and go up above and touch the sky. And I think that any time you spend inside is where your soul goes to die. But when you're outside moving your physical body, you exist outside of the passage of time and you thrive, for this is where we're meant to be, outside exploring endlessly. You know, man isn't supposed to be caged inside like a zoo animal. You know, this to me is the modern day phenomenon where we're becoming these domesticated zoo animals in these air conditioned systems and comfort and control, and find that the comfort is this like thing to pursue, whereas discomfort and pain is actually where we should be. Because once you overcome those challenges, whether they're physical or mental, I think then you become stronger, and through that strength, yeah, you just become happier. So That's my thought on that. And so modern work is very weird. So yeah, I suggest if you're a young man to do anything in your power to at least do something that is physical, because the more physical, the less mentally draining the work will be. And so for me, working in horticulture and landscaping and things, I find that the mental clarity and the mental freedom is so much more important to me in my life, where you can give me a shovel, tell me to go dig ditches all day outside in the sun, and you know, it's nothing to me. Why? Because I'm extremely healthy, I'm extremely strong. And you know, that's why I believe that physicality and being extremely strong is the key to freedom, because real freedom is of the mind. I think you can be a slave of the body and work and toil and, you know, be physically engaged all day long, but if it doesn't faze you and you're just overabundant with power, I mean, it's just overflowing from you anyways, right? Like, the power that I'm exerting at work is overflowing from me. And I found that I actually need to work in this kind of space and environment so that I can actually feel human. And so by having this abundance flow out of me through physicality, I then find the mental clarity through me not having anybody speaking to me and telling me to do this or that, or sitting in a meeting or a phone call, etc. I find that I'm at peace and I'm free, because the freedom of the mind to think, the freedom of the mind to learn, to read a book, to contemplate God is such a luxury. And I find that to be so astonishing in this modern world, that that is a luxury, to just have the freedom of time, you know, because that to me is the ultimate currency in the universe, right? How do you spend your time? What are you paying attention to? Where this to me is something more important in my life. And yeah, I think actually working in a park and spending my time outside over the past year has been the wisest decision I have ever made in my entire life. And you might be wondering why. Well, not only have I found this peace and clarity through reading, through even attending these lectures online. I joined the Peterson Academy, and the high quality lectures they produce are insane. Like, you can learn about astrology, the economy, you can learn about history and the greatest leaders. You know, there's so many different courses that you can take and listen to passively when you're working in a space like this, where you don't have to be in a meeting all day, which is actually really nice. You know, there's this period in my day where I'll be laser focused on simply doing one task, like pruning plants or planting things, like here in these gardens. And then there's other times where I'll engage my mind with lectures. During breaks, I'll walk or lay under a tree. Sometimes I'll read. And yeah, I'll pretty much have this routine of consistency and discipline through being physically active throughout the day, while also stimulating my brain intellectually. And then finally, spiritually, by separating myself from the noise of the city, by removing all of these distractions, by not consuming social media content or anything that is modern, really, I find this clarity and this connection to God. And this connection to God, I found to be one of the most empowering ways in which I frame my past couple of years, because that is everything. And that's what I've realized. You don't need validation from any mortal being in this modern world, but the validation that we should seek should be from God. To me, that's the only person worth appeasing. Not a boss, not a friend, not a family member, not anybody around you, you know? And then when you liberate yourself that way and you have a deep connection to God and you recognize that you are not alone in this universe, well, then anything that comes your way, you can sort of overcome. That's what I find. And so there's power in God. And I find that's where I get my strength. I don't get my strength from my physical body, from my deep sleep, from the meat that nourishes me. No, I genuinely find that the strength that I have that is carried throughout my days derive from a source that is greater than me. And, you know, when you're tapped into the source, you're going to have this energy that is overflowing. And I find that to be love. But authenticity, I believe, is also a really critical component to think about in terms of your personality and who you are. Because if you're authentic and you're free from these societal norms and constraints and the way that people perceive you through validation, well, then you can dance and sing and be free like a bird or like a child, right? Think about the way in which Jesus told us to become a child, to enter the kingdom of heaven, right? This to me is one of his most wise teachings. And when you think of a child, they have no preconceptions about what life is or what they should be. And a child is very innocent. A child is a slave to God. You know, I think when I consider slavery, perhaps this notion could be reframed, where I almost find that you're either a slave to God or you're a slave to sin. And of course there's nuances, but actually when you consider the story of Isaac and Abraham and Abraham's sacrifice in the original covenant with God, where Isaac willingly picks up the wood and carries it to the hill as this child, this innocent slave to God, ultimately that obedience and that will for him to voluntarily offer himself to God is what brought this covenant between humanity and the divine. And so that I think of this more metaphorically, however, when you eliminate all of the vices, when you eliminate all of the sins and you follow the narrow path, right, where you eliminate choices, I could either go left, I'll wind up in the river, hey, there's a squirrel, and I might drown to death. You know, I could go to the right, wind up on the street, get hit by a car, and I'll die. But if I keep walking straight onwards and upwards towards the cliff behind the Philadelphia Museum of Art, I'll have a beautiful view from an elevated space. I'll have a clear connection to the sky up above. There's no one in sight, and I can see beyond the horizon, and I can keep walking endlessly. And I think that freedom, or this feeling of freedom, comes from the elimination of those choices of whether or not you should indulge in this or that, or, you know, these unlimited choices that we have in this life of ours is quite overwhelming. But when you eliminate them all and all the distractions and noise, and you focus solely on following the path of righteousness, of, you know, virtue, then you find the kingdom of heaven through being a little kid. When I wake up in the morning, I treat it like it's a miniature birth. And each night, it's just like a mini death. And I assume I won't wake up in the morning. But when I wake up in the morning like a big kid again, I take my camera, I go for my walk. I get to hear the birds singing, the insects humming, looking at all the beautiful things. And I feel like I see everything anew again. And through that curiosity, I find bliss, and this feeling of bliss, I believe, can be reframed as paradise or the kingdom of God. You know, for when you are a slave to God and obedient to his will, well, then everything else falls into place. And I found this very much genuinely on my journey, which is quite radical, where I was working a job for the city as a photographer in the communications team, making pictures for, you know, silly events and things. And I found myself at this awards ceremony, and everyone was getting an award, and I was looking around me at this banquet as everyone was eating and indulging and drinking. What are we getting awards for? Like, what did we accomplish here? Like, nothing's actually, you know, being accomplished. You know, it's very fake. And I could just feel it was so palpable, and I'm just authentically in that seat looking around like, what is the point and meaning of all this? You know? And I felt very out of place, and I almost felt like I wasn't providing any value to the world. I wasn't providing anything for anybody. And I felt like I was committing sin, genuinely, which sounds crazy, but it's true. And I'm being authentic and telling you that because I felt that way, I quit my job and I left it all behind. And I started to walk on this path here along the Schuylkill River Trail every single day for over a year, returned to Rome to reconnect with my roots, and prayed in the churches and had a mystical experience, and returned home with clarity of how I'd like to carry out my days. And now I find that I'm endlessly in the spirit of play, like a big kid working a job that doesn't feel like a job but feels like play, engaged in a new photographic process, shooting in my own way, and in this constant stream of becoming, of evolving every single day. When you think of a child is a blank slate with endless potential and endless growth and endless opportunity to learn. And through learning and growing and transforming, you find joy. But this joy is very pure. I think joy, it's something that derives from love. And the only way to find true love is through the source. When I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Zambia, Africa, I remember life in the village. You know, when I arrived in the village, I was a surrogate member of the Bemba tribe. I arrived in my village in Mpanta, in Sampia district, Luapula province, Ichibemba. Nashiba Ichibemba sana. Nafwai ukutandala ku Zambia ukubumba in Ichishiba. Kuisa lupoyandi. You know, I remember learning the local language, cooking over the fire. And when I arrived in my village, it's amazing. My host father, he presented me a goat hanging from a tree to slaughter. And then we feasted all week on the meat. And, you know, what a warm welcoming that was. And every single day, what I witnessed in the village was pure love, a divine love, something that's beyond the material world. For everybody has a role to play. Everybody is making their individual sacrifice voluntarily, willingly, right? And that sacrifice came in many forms, where mothers are coming home with babies on their back and firewood on their head. The men are building churches and homes. The boys are building bricks with sand and mud. The girls are sweeping the floors, preparing food for the day. Everybody has a role to play in the family unit, in the tribe, within a village. And there's this hierarchy between God, tribe, and land that I realized is the key to a functioning and flourishing society where everybody is loving. And there's no need for bureaucracies. There's no need for systems of control for police and government. And that's quite radical, because when everybody is a slave to God, then everything falls into place. And I think that is a very beautiful consideration. And when you look at the village, the central focal point of the village is a church where everybody comes together to learn about the teachings of Jesus and to have an archetype, to have somebody to strive to be like through moral teachings and guidance. Every individual strives to be like God. And when every individual strives to become like God, despite our flesh nature, where we cut, we bleed, we feel sorrow, pain, and greed, right? We're imperfect in our nature. We are all imperfect creatures, but that imperfection I find to be perfection. And when you recognize that you are flesh yet strive for God, you know, this to me is very empowering, where recognizing our finite timeline, where we will and must die at the end of our lives, is what makes us so divine. And yeah, I find a lot of power thinking this way about the village and what I witnessed and experienced, and how every human within the tribe is a slave to God. And through that obedience to something greater, through striving to be like God, the whole community thrives. And to take this back to this notion of divine love and where that sort of love comes from, I think about another focal point in the village, another central location that people would come to visit every single day, being the well. In order for any community to thrive, to even exist, generally, is to have water, right? I'm looking at the Fairmount Waterworks here. I believe initially was a well. I know that in the center of Center City and City Hall, there was originally a well, and without that well, there would have been no Philadelphia, and without the water and without this vital nutrient, that people wouldn't be able to come to drink. And so, Yeah, actually the Schuylkill River, then just nearby, it means Hidden Creek. And if you follow this trail up 5 miles, I'll be by the Manayunk neighborhood. And Manayunk means where we go to drink. And the Lenape tribe that originally dwelled here, the natives, would go to the water to drink, right? And so in the village, there's a well at the center, as alongside the church. And everybody came to the well with buckets on their heads, drawing water. And this nutrients that the water provides is what gives the human being this vitality, this physical vitality that is needed to simply exist and be. However, if you think about the well metaphorically, how is it constructed? Right? You have to dig deep with lots of struggle and strife. You have to dig to the depths of hell to connect to the source. And then once you connect to the source, the well is overflowing and it's going to provide these nutrients and abundance and allow people to come and drink endlessly. And so I find that through struggle and digging, through pain, it takes a long time, but eventually you connect to the source. And then when you connect to the source, you're overflowing, and you're overflowing with love for other people to come and drink from you. And then from this abundant state of being where you're simply overflowing with this energy.
Yeah, and if everybody within a community taps into the source and becomes like a well for other people to come and drink from, well, that's where you see human thriving. And I personally witnessed it within the village, because these villages, there's no electricity, no running water, you know, no modern amenities, no toilets, right? Yet the pure love and joy and bliss that I've experienced in these places, it's unlike anything. And it really does reframe the way in which you see the world and look at a lot of these like modern things that distract us and keep us disconnected and keep us away from something greater than ourselves. And so, yeah, I find lots of power in the divine, and I find that to be the ultimate source of inspiration. And so once you're overflowing with love, I think everything falls into place. And through that love, you become authentic. And through that authenticity, you find joy, and you sort of are in this like endless state. I think that's a very beautiful. And when you look at the word inspiration, inspirare, meaning to breathe into, you know, this sort of notion,
I believe, very divine. Because if you think of God breathing life into you, I mean, that to me is the ultimate sort of breath of life, you know. And all of these natural things around me right now, the insects humming, the birds, the bees and the trees and all of these leaves, you know, this to me is where you can find the purest form of inspiration, for these are God's creations. And when you recognize the divine within all living things, you become empowered. When I look at the patterns of the leaves and, you know, the veins that carry the nutrients and water throughout the trees, and recognize the way in which my veins and my body carry my nutrients, and the shape of the lungs echo the shape of the tree branches extending upwards towards the sky, I find the divine. And I find that exchange I have between the trees and my body is a divine exchange between me and God's creations, as I am also created in the image of God. And when you find that you're created in the image of God, is that not such a beautiful thing? I mean, we are all created in the image of God, right? And you find that very simply, I think, by looking at nature, and you see God reflected in it. But what I find to be even more profound, and it gives me like chills, like I have like goosebumps thinking about it, is when you look at a human and you see God within a human. And once you experience that, I mean, and you feel that divine love, that overflow, everything changes. And, you know, it's almost like everything in your brain, your body, your soul rearranges. And when I spent my time traveling throughout Rome, I simply wanted to connect with God. I was curious and very much in this flow state in Rome of waking up each morning. I attended some Italian classes. I would walk to the church. I would pray. And then I would simply
stroll, and I would stroll through the streets of Rome with my camera and make photographs. And every day I wound up at the Castello di Sant'Angelo, I believe, where the sculpture of St. Michael the Archangel is seated on top of the castle outside of Vatican City, thrusting Satan back down into hell. And the reason why I returned to this castle every day is because I found, through my childlike naivete that brought me back to Rome, I found this sort of inner spirit within me, this inner warrior spirit that was simply curious, where I remember as a boy, we never learned about St. Michael the Archangel. I actually was born and raised here in Philadelphia. I went to a Catholic school from grades pre-K to grade 8. And we never learned about St. Michael the Archangel. I remember we learned about the Angel of Death. That freaked me out. But alas, when I returned to church around Easter here in Philadelphia, and I heard that we would recite the prayer to St. Michael the Archangel at the end or the beginning of Mass, I felt empowered. Like, it felt like we were going into battle when I left church. And so when I was in Rome, I would go to the castle and I would pray and try to basically just memorize that prayer. And I was just curious about just learning that prayer, basically. And through that act of learning how to pray by remembering and reciting a prayer, I found the conversations I would have in prayer became much more personal from there, where I would walk along the river, walk on a nature path like this, and find that the genuine sort of conversation or connection you have with God through prayer in your head, where you're not just reciting a prayer, but you're actually having a dialogue, you will find answers. And so I don't even think you need to go to a church or a physical temple to connect with God. I find actually the connection to God is much more clear when you're around natural things, when you're around you know, trees and plants and things, which is interesting. Especially when you're alone, I think the connection is much greater. But anyways, I would recite this prayer over and over again, and I would return to the same church every day as well, Via del Corso, the street in Rome by the Spanish Steps. There's this beautiful church. It's a church titled Santa Maria Miracale, something like this, some sort of miracle church to Mary. And I would pray there. It was this Baroque-inspired church, very small but beautiful. So much beautiful art in these churches that are so inspiring. And, you know, I think there is something to be said about finding the divine within these spaces, because when you look at the grand architecture, the columns, the intricacies, the details, the ornaments, the sculptures, the paintings, you know, you look up at a high ceiling, you know, you can certainly feel there's something divine there. And I remember I would go and drink from this miracle well just nearby. There's this miracle well, and I would go and I would drink from it. And I just thought that was interesting. I was like, what is this? This is kind of cool. And yeah, I would go there and I drank from the miracle well. And what's really interesting, and this is like me recalling, you know, these stories from far, you know, a couple of years ago, so it's like everything's discombobulated here. But when I returned to church in Philadelphia before my trip to Rome, I went on a bike pilgrimage, and the bike pilgrimage took me to the Miraculous Metal Shrine in Germantown. And so that was one of the first little pilgrimages I went on before Rome, which is interesting. And then
I went for a day trip to Paris.
And when I arrived in Paris, I went to bed. Thinking about me, actually, I found one of these like cheap like
Chinese stores.
Like
a load of like just cheap shitty meat, and I just like ate a bunch of meat,
and then I went to sleep, and then I woke up from a dream where a clouded dragon was chasing me and transformed into a rainbow. And the very next day, as I'm walking around the streets of Paris, I'm there for 48 hours, right? I remember I was by the Eiffel Tower and I was making photographs, and this woman came up to me and she asked me to make a photo of her and her family.
And when I made the photograph, she said something like,
"Oh, Bresson." When she looked at the photo, she said, "The composition is like Bresson." I said, "Bresson, you know Bresson?" And she said, "Yes, I was a friend of Bresson." And she was explaining to me how
she was a friend of Bresson at one point, and
she would call her a certain nickname. And then I stumbled across this bookstore where I found
Dear Mr. Niepce by
Daido Moriyama, and I purchased this beautiful book where Daido essentially goes back in time and photographs the first photograph in the location where the chemist who invented photography photographed. And upon my walk, I stumbled across a sculpture of Saint Michael the Archangel. Seated beneath him, two dragons, and above the sculpture
of Saint Michael the Archangel
was a rainbow. And I remember I called my godmother in that moment and I asked her about what this means, and she was explaining to me that it's a wink from God. And ever since that day, I think I believe in miracles, or at least have a deeper connection to God. Because when I consider that naivete and that childlike state that I was in,
I had no idea who St. Michael the Archangel really was and what these dragons represent. I remember asking her on the phone, and she was discussing the Book of Revelations and the battle in heaven, you know, good and evil, you know, the dragon representing Satan that St. Michael is fighting against, right?
And the sort of dream and the synchronicity of the rainbow in real life. That rainbow did not need to be there, but it was there. You know, it wasn't raining or anything. It's just wild. And then I remember I returned to Rome and I went back to the church that I was praying in every single day. That sort of Santa Maria Miracale church, whatever it was called. And I spoke to the pastor there about that experience, and he actually gave me a miraculous medal. And I just thought that was amazing. And then I continued working on my street photography throughout that journey and came back home. And it's just wild. At the end of that trip, I received a miraculous medal. But before that trip, I literally went to the miraculous medal shrine after returning to church for the first time after like a decade. You know, like I literally returned to church after like a decade of like not over a decade. Like I haven't gone to church since I was like 13. I'm now 29. It was like 2 or 3 years ago.
Or returned to church like 3 years ago, basically. And it's all from the childlike state of being. It's not like
I wasn't even reading the Bible.
I just only
recently started reading the Bible. I only just recently started to discover new ideas and stuff from the New Testament, or reading the Old Testament, etc.
And that's the beauty of it.
Like really, when you strip yourself down to the bare bones, you know, there's definitely a reason why they say that.
And these like ancient
traditions do have this clear connection to something. You know, it's like the vagus nerve carries all that information from your gut to your brain. I think it's more intelligent
than your brain, right? Where the
gut
and having an empty gut is maybe the first step to finding God and having a
connection to the divine, which I find to be really powerful and definitely something that I found to put me down this journey. And you know, it all came from walking barefoot alone, and maybe after all I was always with God. And when you think about Moses, and when he witnessed the burning bush and had his experience with God, the first thing that God told him to do was to remove his shoes. And I didn't do it out of any
sort of
prior knowledge of theology or spirituality or anything.
I started doing it as like a health journey.
But now I'm starting to wear barefoot shoes forever, because I almost find it like this is a part of my spiritual journey now. And I think there's a reason for that. I think there was a reason why God told him to remove his shoes. And that reason is humility. And when you think of a child born into the world, after the child comes from the womb, he doesn't have shoes with him, any material things with him, right? Hey, yeah. Oh, you got the barefoot shoes on too. Let's go. So the guy literally has the Vibrams, dude. He's running with the Vibrams. No shit. No shit.
That's crazy.
I wish I could film. I don't know. You might have seen it with the GoPro. That dude was pointing at my shoes. He's wearing the freaking Vibrams as I'm talking about it.
It's amazing.
Synchronicities have been happening to me
way more frequently
since this experience. And I want to tell you a very personal story here that I've wanted to share, but I've been apprehensive to do so.
And part of this discussion has been that since coming from the cliff over there. And so for the past year since working in this park, I've
simply been in such a... I basically just been living like a monk. I've been living like a monk. I just created a Zen garden. I have a Zen garden now. In the greenhouse that I work at, and that's like, I'm so grateful, and it's such a blessing because I really don't feel like I fit into this world. Like, I'm kind of just here. But yeah, thinking about the child with no possessions when he comes into the world, right? It's like, you're gonna leave this world without shoes, right? You're gonna leave this world without all the things that you sort of leave behind here, but the treasures, right, there's something eternal to those treasures, and it's the relationship that you build with God. But I don't know how to describe this. It's this story here. I'm gonna try to just freestyle it here. Basically, I'm just gonna say the story. I started riding the bus to get to work. Because I was riding my bike to work and it just kept popping. The tires kept fucking popping and it was really annoying. And so I started taking the bus. And the first day I took the bus, there was this girl on the bus. And when I saw this girl on the bus, I had this experience where it wasn't natural. It felt like anamnesis, which is Plato's or this Greek idea of, you know, remembering, right? This like act of remembering. And it almost felt like I was remembering something divine, like looking at a soul, basically. And like, it was something that like clicked with me the first time I saw this human being, was like a soul recognition, which is just like weird. And like, I've never seen that or experienced that with another human being. And then I kept riding the bus. I never spoke to this person. I just, you know, just living my days in the spirit of play, working on my photography in the mornings on the bus. I would do drawings on my iPad and things. Just living my life, you know, no attachments. It wasn't like, oh, I love this girl. You know, it's more so like, I see something divine here in a person, and it's weird. And I feel like I see a soul or something. And a year later, around Easter this year, 2025, I don't know why, but I decided to take a hot bath in the middle of the night before Easter Sunday, and I lit a candle and I gave myself a baptism. And the reason why, this is so crazy, I keep saying parts of the story, I have to retract. The reason why I decided to give myself a baptism was because months prior to Easter, I ran into some Amish guy walking down the street with some dude that like looked like Jesus with like a long beard and long hair or whatever. And he was walking with these two Amish guys on this trail that I'm walking on. And he came up to me and he asked me, have you ever had to, oh wow, the, see the fish?
Yeah,
yeah, the duck's got a catfish. Yeah, that's awesome. I've never seen that. Whoa. And this Amish guy with this like Jesus figure basically asked me and prompted me a question like, have you ever had to tell somebody something that was the truth but would hurt them? And then I was stumped, and I was sitting there talking to this person, and then, you know, we were talking about what it means to be born again and the story of Nicodemus talking to Jesus about being born of the water and the spirit, etc. And I remember when I was with these Amish guys, we walked to the train station here in Philadelphia at 30th Street, and they would just sit on the bench and like talk to people. There was one point where we stood in this like open space as people lined up at the trains station, and we just started singing together, just like singing out loud in this fucking this train station. And I was just standing there and I was singing alongside some Amish people inside the church, like these like church songs.
And before we got, you know what's crazy is before we went into the train station, the man, the figure that was like looked like Jesus, whatever, that was friends with these Amish people, he saw this like person that was obviously like on drugs or unwell. He went up to him and he put his hand on his back and was like comforting him, and then he rose him up and brought him to the station, gave him his phone, had him call a family or friend to send him some money so he could get home. I was like, wow, that was really wholesome. And then we started to sing, and then I returned to the train station time and time again to meet with these Amish guys to simply sing and talk and chat, and eventually was invited to Lancaster to a Bible study, or really just like a Sunday church, like church session, whatever, but it's like inside of like an Amish home. And so it was like in the basement of like an Amish home, and these Amish people were like excommunicated from their church, and they were young people like me, and they didn't feel like they fit in within their church. And we were singing, and then you start to pray for each other that is in a circle with the people next to you, which was just like profound. It's like, you know, in the Catholic tradition, you have all these like songs that you sing, and then you listen to the gospel and you do this, you do that, whatever. But like the way that they prayed was very unconventional. You just like sang together for like 45 minutes, and then you pray for the people next to you, and then you, everybody, like we like read from the Bible, a book from Revelations where like Saint Michael the Archangel is like fighting over the body of Moses or something. It was like a really niche like story where like Saint Michael the Archangel was discussed, where you can't really find too many stories about him in the Bible. But anyways, we all went around and I would say a sentence, and the next person would say a passage, whatever. And then flashback to Easter, and it's the day before Easter, and I take my hot bath, I light a candle, and I give myself my own personal baptism. Because when I was with these Amish guys, we were kind of jokingly telling each other, like, we should go do like a real baptism, you know, like how it is in the Bible. Like, we'll just baptize each other in the water, like John the Baptist or whatever, you know, and like find like a creek or something. And I was like, well, why don't I just do it for myself? And then the next morning, Easter Sunday, I wake up at 3:33 a.m. I'm like, okay. And I didn't really think anything of that, because I don't know, I did just pay attention to that. And then like all these synchronicities started to pile up, where this girl from the bus, I wound up like chatting with this person, and like there were just like numerous things that like synced in like weird ways. Like there was one period where we were sharing what we were reading, and I was reading like The City of God, and she was reading like God of the Woods or something, which is like just weird. I don't know, it's like, what are the odds that like these book titles are very similar? And then, I mean, there was just numerous things. Like I remember I asked her out, like, to go for a trip to the Rodin Museum. I was like, I've never been to the Rodin. I finally talked to this person. I was like, you want to go to the Rodin? And I found out that she was, like, related to, like, famous sculptors or something. And it's just like, huh. And then I went to the gym one day. And, oh, wait, before that, I wound up writing. So I went to dinner with some friends, and they were talking about women and, you know, going on dates like from like Tinder or whatever, and like hooking up with girls and stuff. And I was just like, I don't feel like, I don't really care for that kind of stuff right now. Like I've been doing like the semen retention for like 3 or 4 years, like 4 years straight. Like literally, it's like changed my life.
And I was like talking to them about that, and then I was like, don't you find that like you can have like the feeling of like lust for somebody or love for somebody, but transmute that into something creative, like for me, photography, whatever. And I told them about this person from the bus, and I was like, yeah, because they were talking about like girls they were going on dates with. I was like, oh yeah, I asked this one girl out to go for a date, whatever, but you know, we never wound up doing it, which was fine. But I was like thinking about the initial experience I had when I witnessed this person. It was like you could see light in another person. And then I remember going home around this time in Easter, and I wrote a poem. And it was a poem about this person, right? And it was like, not like a love poem or something. It was more so like an invitation to the kingdom of God. It's like how I can describe it. I basically made like a mythopoetic poem about this person being like Athena, basically. I'll just say that much. She had like really bright eyes, and I called her in the poem. It was titled Bright-Eyed Athena. And I wrote this poem, and I just held on to it, and I just wound up just holding on to it, not thinking too much about it, just like wrote the poem, moved on, and just continued living my life. I didn't need to like have any validation or like seek out any of a relationship with this person, right? Because that was never my intention. I don't know, it was like something beyond me that I can't even describe. And then I went to the gym one day, and I pushed myself way too hard or something. I remember when I came home from the gym, I just fell asleep. I didn't do my normal recovery routine of taking a cold shower and a hot bath. And I guess because of that, in combination with me pushing my body so hard, in the middle of the night, my body locked out. I literally couldn't move. I was like paralyzed, I swear. Like any movement, I felt like a sharp shooting pain down my whole body, and it felt like hell. The next day I wake up, I go to work, and man, I could barely work. During my break, I was walking through the garden, and as I was walking through the garden, something so profound happened to me in this state of being where my body was completely broken. But like my soul poured out. And when I was walking through the garden, I was looking around me at all the beauty and all the trees and listening to the birds and looking at the insects and the butterflies and the grass sort of moving. And I just started to cry. Just like so many tears just coming down my face. And I started to cry out like, Lord, Lord, like I don't deserve any of this beauty and any of this love. Like why? And then I collapsed on the ground. And when I collapsed on the ground, I was crying for like 10 minutes. And my eyes shut. And then I opened my eyes. And I was laughing hysterically. And I looked around me. And I wiped the tears from my eyes. And I got up. And I was just so happy. Just like smiling intensely. And it was just such an incredible experience. And I feel like when I gave myself that baptism in the water, it felt like maybe like the Holy Spirit like descended in me. And then I experienced this like divine union with God, genuinely, like this overflowing divine love, this like very pure, like agape love, I learned through reading Plato and the Symposium, these notions of love. It's like, that's like, I experienced like the peak, like kind of like in Dante's Inferno at the end in Paradiso, where Beatrice is the guide for Dante to go to God. And like, I genuinely think like I experienced that through this person that I witnessed on the bus. I witnessed like God. It's like I witnessed God. Like I saw God in another human. And that brought me to a divine union with God, collapsing in the garden in tears, waking up in just an immense feeling of joy and love. And now I feel like I can love so freely and like openly, and like I feel like the experience of love that I felt, it's like, wow, like that is real love. And then I remember I decided from that day that whatever that poem I wrote, I had to give it to this person, not out of need or want or to seek anything in return, but genuinely because something so divine occurred. And I wrote the poem and put it together, and you know, I would see this person all the time in the park, like just always thinking and like being in the same place at the same time. So I just carried it with me, and I just carried it as like this token of like just divine love within. Yeah. Yeah. It's got some blood on the back. There's like some blood on its like butt. Yeah, I don't know. It might be injured, yeah. Yeah, the bikers maybe, honestly, yeah.
Yeah, they do. I see
them. Yeah, it could have been the bikes.
Yeah. Oh, I found one dead over there yesterday.
Did you?
It's them bikes.
Yeah.
The bikes hit them so hard.
Yeah.
You see blood on it?
Yeah, you see it on the back. There's like blood on the...
Oh, poor baby.
Yeah, most likely it was a bike, but... I don't really know what you do in a situation like that.
Oh,
I feel like the Schuylkill River Trail has people that work on the trail.
Yeah.
Eventually they drive by with their gator and they'll see it.
Yeah, he's breathing hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, them bikers do it.
Yeah.
They'll be flying by so fast, you know?
Hmm. Poor geese. Goose. But yeah, I decided to carry that with me, and wound up sitting down and just giving it to this girl. And she's like, "You really were carrying this around to give to me?" I actually admitted to her on the bus one time beforehand. I actually told her, I was like, "I gave you a name." I was like, "It's Gray-Eyed Athena." I genuinely was like, I felt like she was a muse, you know, like genuinely like a muse. Because when I was on the bus and I would be in my flow state of like creating on my iPad, it was like I had this like divine inspiration just being around this other soul. And even after like saying that to this person, they didn't like shy away. Like I could continue having conversations with her, and like she didn't think I was like weird or whatever for saying that, which is probably fucking weird. Considering this modern world, right? Like, who the hell is making a poem and giving it to someone and calling them your muse or whatever? But it was like, and I haven't seen this person again, I really don't even care if I do, it's like, wow, that gift of love. And then the next day I ran into this monk in the park, and I had to confess to him the story, and I told him everything I'm telling you right now, essentially. And I told him at the end what happened, and I showed him the gift, whatever. And then I told him about my experience collapsing in the garden, and like, I genuinely was like, I think I experienced divine love or something beyond me. Like, I think it was agape love. And when I told him that word, he then told me that the gospel of the day, like that day that I told him this, was when Jesus asked Peter three times, "Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me?" But in the Greek translation, on the original translation of the Bible, the third time Jesus asked Peter, "Do you love me?" he asked him, "Do you agape me?" And when he told me that, I was like, what? Like, that's literally what I was just discussing with him. And it was like synced in the Bible from the gospel of the day. And like, I genuinely feel like
I've been like living out the Bible in like real life without even like reading the Bible or something. And I think that the synchronicities were really like overwhelming, because it might sound like I was looking too much into it, but the day that I asked that girl to go to the museum, I remember asking ChatGPT, I said, what is this day? Like, what is the significance of, it was like May 25th or something. Because I was just curious, because something in my spirit really felt like there was something significant, really, about this particular day. Like, and I was just curious, like, what is this day? Like, does this day have any meaning deeper or whatever? And it was apparently the day that Saint Michael the Archangel first appeared in a cave somewhere in Puglia in Italy. There was like an apparition. It was like the apparition of Saint Michael. And now there's like all these monasteries throughout the mountain ranges over there that like venerate Saint Michael the Archangel or something. And this is like a holy site. And it's just wild that my childlike naivete, through going back to church, being a little kid again, kind of just learning on my own, sort of just like in the wilderness for years, just walking in solitude here on this trail, has led me to this like divine union with God, which is just so profound. And I feel like now I have Saint Michael the Archangel just always over my shoulder, just like guiding me into battle every day in like a real way, where it's not just, you know, some mystical thing. But maybe after all, I guess God put me on the path of a mystic or something, because I really feel like that connection I felt in the garden was something so beyond me, so overwhelming. And now ever since then, I'm just overflowing with love and joy. And it's like, I no longer need validation from the world. I no longer need love from anybody, from anything, like really. But like, I just want to embody that divine love so that other people can come to my fountain to drink from, so that other people can see the light within me like I saw the light within another human, which then sparked that divine union with God, right? Like when I saw the divine in another person, that it's so profound, and now I can't unsee it in every living person, in every living thing. I see that divine signature within, and there has to be some archetypal truth to the story in Dante's Inferno where Beatrice carries him to paradise, and maybe you can find that through another person that nudges you to the divine. And I think I, throughout my spiritual journey here, found that is what ultimately acted as a catalyst, or like a mirror reflecting the divine, carrying me there in union. And now I'm just like walking the streets as like a modern mystic monk in disguise, kind of just I'm in the garden, you know, frolicking around, doing hard work, sort of tending this garden, you know, just spending my time with God. And feel like Adam just chilling in the Garden of Eden now. And maybe paradise hasn't been lost after all. And in order to find paradise, you have to dive within, and you have to remove all of the distractions, all the noise, all the chatter. The signal isn't clear when your brain is mentally cluttered with all of these business affairs to tend to, all of these emails and text messages to check. And I think the further we stray away from that mental clarity, the further we stray away from a connection to something greater than ourselves, being God. And this story was very poorly explained, considering I'm recalling thoughts and experiences over the past few years randomly in a video that I didn't plan on making. But I think that if one other person listened to this and understands, then I did something worthwhile this morning. Otherwise, I'm just going to continue my morning now, I suppose. as it's just such a beautiful day. And yeah, how I experienced a divine union with God. Yeah, I mean, I wrote everything down on my phone as well, so I'll probably publish the full story on my blog, because I did organize like all of my thoughts to like explain in depth and detail exactly how this sort of occurred for me. And maybe if I share my story, if I share the good news, and you know, maybe that's just a good thing. I gotta share the good news. That's what I'm starting to realize. God is good. God is love. And I'll just leave it at that.